mostly cloudy with a low around 33. Wednesday, partly sunny with a high near 49. Wednesday night, partly cloudy with a low around 32.
Good afternoon and welcome to Mental Health Matters. I'm Larry Cartwright, your host. My co-host is Tracy Ivey. And this is NAMI's Hour, compliments of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness. There's a chapter of NAMI in every county in the state of New Jersey, every state in the union, and overseas. In Hunterdon County, we're all volunteers, work out of our houses, use our own phones, etc. And what we try to do is we try to help people who either have someone in their family or know someone or are related to someone who has a mental health issue. And we also, if we get in contact or somebody contacts us who has a mental health issue, we try to get them the service and the that they need to go on with their lives. Now, we do this in a couple different ways. One of the ways we do it is we have what they call a family-to-family class, which I believe is going to start February 22nd, I think, at the hospital on a Saturday from 9 to 11:30. You can go to NAMIHunterdon.org and check and see what the actual time thing is, but I believe that's what it is. And what happens in a family-to-family class is we go over medications, side effects of the medications, what to do, what not to do, what to say, what not to say in certain circumstances. And we try to get the individual who's taken the class feel what it's like to be the person with the mental health issue. We also have a support group the third Thursday of every month, and it's at 52 East Main Street in Flemington, which is known as the Getting Together Center. You don't have to be a member of NAMI to take the class or to come to the support group. But you do have to register for the class because they can only have a certain amount of people there. We can have as many as need be in the support group. But you don't have to register for the support. You just show up. And you, like I said, you don't have to be a member of NAMI. If there's any questions that you have, you can reach out to us at 908-284-0500. That's 908-284-0500. And we don't have somebody man it 24 hours a day, but we do have someone who checks it at least twice a day, and we promise we'll get back to you as soon as possible. Today, we are very privileged to have with us a counselor at Intensive Family Support Services at the Hunterdon Medical Center, Cheryl, and she's going to have to say her last name because there's no way I'm going to say
it. It is Oosteyk.
Oosteyk?
Oosteyk.
Oosteyk.
Oosteyk. It's Dutch. Oosteyk. The T and the D kind of blend. So you can just go by Cherie. That's what I go by. That's easier.
Yeah, I understand that. But, you know, I was just, you know, trying to figure out how do you say that.
Yeah, those two O's are like one O.
Oosteyk.
Oosteyk.
Oosteyk. Okay. Well, that's, you know, now I can. Now all I got to do is remember it. You know? And I appreciate you coming.
Thank you for having me.
And it's, you know, I thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to be here today.
Thank you.
I want to start off by asking, what exactly is IFFS? Now, I know what it is. I've dealt with it for quite a while. But a lot of people out there don't.
Right.
So, and do you know how or why it was started also?
It's a free program. It's grant-funded through the state of New Jersey. And what we basically do is support the family members of a loved one that you have that's diagnosed with a mental illness. They must be 17 and a half or older. And we kind of see there's such a focus on the actual patient, the one diagnosed. And they have services, they have treatment, they get them counselors, hospitalizations, kind of whatever there is. And the family's kind of left there without the support. A lot of questions, a lot of frustrations, a lot of confusion, hard to get the answers, you know, hard to get involved, especially if they are, you know, the one diagnosed is older.
Right. Right.
So what we try to do is we're unique for each family. So it's really their needs, what they need. Meeting with them, it could be weekly, it could be monthly, it could be really whatever their needs are. It's a supportive counseling, so we don't do therapy per se. We're really more of what do you need? Do you need resources? Do you need to vent? Do you need to just talk with somebody? Do you need to be hooked up with another support group somewhere else for an understanding? So it's finding what that family member needs or what that friend needs of the one mm-hmm. diagnosed, mm-hmm. and then how can we help to get you there? How can we make sure that you're getting what you need through a very difficult time?
Now, I know for a fact that if someone comes for a period of time and then doesn't come for a couple of years, they can come back.
They're always with us.
Right. Yeah, they yes. can come back. So that's, yeah, that's...
Yes, we do not close a case per se. So what we do is we initially set up a meeting.
Okay.
We meet in the office, out in the community, or in the family member's home. It's what's convenient for you. We just don't have contact with the, I'll call them the identified patient. That's the family member with mm-hmm. the diagnosis. We don't have contact with them, so we don't speak with them.
Right.
When we have that initial meeting, it's to get a history, it's to get the story, it's to get what's happened to them, what have they gone through, where they are right now, and where do they feel like they need to be, and how can we get them there. So it's meeting them where they're at,
right.
So everyone is unique in that way.
I always ask guests how they got involved in this type of work. Now, I know some say that, oh, something happened when I was, 15, and I always wanted to do it from that point on. And then they're like my story,
Right.
Where my son wound up in state hospital for almost 3 years and in and out after that more times than I care to remember. And that's how I got involved in NAMI and doing these things and the radio show, et cetera, et cetera. So how did you get involved in this type of work?
I think probably a little bit of a roundabout way. For about almost 20 years, I worked in Pennsylvania. I worked with clients that were 3 to 21 years old, either in crisis or severe behavior issues or a mental illness diagnosis. I would go to the home. I would do individual therapy with them, work on their behaviors where they're at. Also led to working with the family as well mm-hmm. because they're part of that household right. and the dynamic made a difference. So it was really more of family support on how they can work on the behaviors, not so much kind of looking at their side of things. Thought I could change up my career a little bit. Went to Hunterdon Medical Center, and I was a screener for emergency services.
Right.
And through doing that, started to see what intensive family support services was about, because we do offer those services through the emergency room. And kind of looking at that, I thought, you know what, that might be something that's a little bit more to my background, and it would be a nice change up. So I ended up just going into that. So now for 2 years, I've been a therapist with intensive family support services, and I completely enjoy the change of working specifically with just the families, as well as a lot of the families that I work with, their children are now adults, and that's what I'm working with.
Right,
so
right.
I've kind of switched over to working with the older group, which I have really enjoyed.
Now, if someone comes for the first time, what basically is the procedure for that?
We sit down. And I kind of just get a general history, because at that point, we typically don't know that much about them.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll tell me what the diagnosis is, what the medications they're on, if there are any siblings in the home, kind of what their issues have been, what they're looking for, what they're hoping to change, or what support they might need. We go through a couple questionnaires just so I get a feel of what they've gone through,
right.
where they are right,
right
now, and how best to help them. The appointments, I've had appointments that last an hour. I've had appointments that last 4. It's not a limit of a 45
mm-hmm.
minute and you're out
right.
the door. It's really what you need.
Right.
The focus is truly on the family and not that structure of you're in and out and maybe you don't get anything,
right.
that you all needed. Once we have that initial appointment, we set up goals and then decide, what do you think is best? Do you want to meet with me weekly, monthly? However that goes, we set up an appointment, and that's kind of how it goes. Like we mentioned before, there is no closure with us. If you need us intensely for 6 months and then things are kind of stable, you're doing okay, you can kind of just step back and see how you do, and all you have to do is give a call. If things kind of detour
right.
off and you're not doing well, just call us back and we bring you right in. Our schedules, it's 2 of us right now, and our schedules are pretty flexible. We try to cover most of the bases, so it's pretty easy to get an appointment
mm-hmm.
in quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this could be for someone who doesn't live at home, but the family is still involved in their care.
Absolutely. And it is not just family members. We've had friends. We've had pretty much anyone that's involved with that particular person with the diagnosis. We will see them. So it's just the actual patient that we don't see. Anyone else that has questions, concerns, panics, whatever it might be. We see them.
It is a wonderful resource, and I had always wondered if it was national, but now you clarified that it's actually a state program.
It is in every county in New Jersey.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So we do.
Taxes at work.
Yes. So we do have. I can see anyone, even if, as long as the family member or the patient lives in Hunterdon County or has services through Hunterdon County, I can see them. If not, I usually try to refer them out so they're closer to home.
Right. You know, people don't think about or plan to become a caregiver, whether it's for a aged parent or who has, you know, dementia or whatever, or not, or just can't physically take care of themselves
right.
anymore. I know I didn't think about it, you know. Went through three kids, and then my fourth one, boom,
yeah.
you know. And all of a sudden it happens. And, you know, most of us are shocked and in a trance and we don't know what to do.
Right.
So would you speak to the impact of being a caregiver?
The impact is astronomical, especially seeing it from this side, because you don't expect anything to happen.
Right.
You know, you have hopes and dreams for your child. You have wishes of how it might be. You have a vision of what it might look like. And all of a sudden you see it derail a little bit. You might see behaviors that don't quite match up in your mind. You might start to see things just don't seem right. You get confused. You're not sure, kind of denying, no, this can't be. When you finally do get that diagnosis, I think that initial shock that you mentioned, it takes some type of support to kind of work through that. There's so many people that feel they shouldn't reach out. They're embarrassed to reach out. You know, is this only me? And I think the more we get the word out and we talk about it, you see how large of a issue this is. It's not isolated. Mm. It hits every socioeconomic area, any kind of person. There's no
right.
restriction on who's going to get hit with a mental illness. And despite it being something that's typically thrown on the caregiver, they may go into it with such an open mind and want to make those changes and realize as they go through, it is very difficult. It's difficult to see the changes in your family member. It is difficult to know how to deal with it. I see so many families that make their whole life about that child and lose who they are. They lose friends. They lose spouses. It's hit them on every angle, and they just sometimes feel guilt, sometimes just feel questions of why me, and they just jump into it and lose every piece of themselves and come to us broken. Just, I can't do this anymore. I don't know what to do. Not having to see any way kind of through it and just really at a loss. And I think our goal primarily is really to get them to see that they need to take care of themselves first. They have to be healthy. They have to be getting sleep. And I think more than anything else, too, the education. Because the knowledge can be such power for a family member to understand, what is this mental illness? What does it mean? What does it mean for my family member? What are they going through? What are they feeling? Or what about medications? What does that look like? There's so many out there, and what works for one person does not work for another.
Everybody else, right.
And it's such a struggle. And when you have somebody who can kind of guide you through and answer your questions and give you the support that you're doing the best you can as a parent. And that piece, I think, is where caregivers struggle, because they just feel like they're not doing enough, and I should have done this, and what if I had done this? And mental illness isn't about what kind of a parent you were. It's genetically, it is what it is. And
it's a chemical imbalance of the brain.
Right.
And you know, people who have it didn't ask for it.
Right.
You know?
Right.
They didn't say, raise their hand and give it to me, you know.
Yeah.
But I know that people handle things a lot differently. I know I did. I would have done anything short of murder to help my son.
Right.
I didn't want to talk about it. My wife would ask me, you know, things she want to talk. I'd go in the other room and read a book, or I'd get in the car and go down to the truck stop and get coffee. I didn't want to talk about it. And this went on for years. Finally, after about almost 6 years of not talking about it, people ask me how the family was. Oh, Paul's doing great. Scott's doing this. Sherry's doing that. I got four kids, you know, and I'd never mention my fourth son.
Yeah.
And finally, my wife just about literally drugged me to IFSS, to the previous woman who I believe, oh, I know, has since passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And she, after a couple months, seeing her once a week with my wife, got me to face certain things and react to them differently. And, you know, to some people it's very morbid, but what I did was I visualized in my head my son died,
mm-hmm.
and he was in a casket. Now I have another son, and he has mental illness,
mm-hmm.
and I'll do everything I can to help him. So it was and that's how I got involved, talking and speaking and, you know, doing all this happy stuff to try to help other people not go through years of neglecting
and it. And it happens a lot. I mean, it's such an ambiguous loss. I mean, it is like the death of the child that you had, and then you have this other child who's psychologically different, and you lose all the dreams you had for the one, and now you're trying to figure out where do we go with this. And it's a grief that a lot of parents bring up of, you know, what do you do with that? Because physically this person is present, but he's not. And I think we discuss that a lot when I work with families of you kind of have to try to separate that person from the mental illness. And that's difficult to do. But when you can kind of look at this is still my child, this is still that person, but they are different and the mental illness has made them different, and learning how to deal with that and not get so emotionally in there that you can't figure out, well, how do I help them best? Because you're emotionally locked in to that. It's difficult.
And go ahead.
I think not everyone grieves right away. A lot of people are still fighting it for years. They can't accept that it's really over.
Yes.
If it is over.
Yeah. And we have a lot of families. I mean, I have families where their adult child is in their 40s and 50s and still coming to terms with how do we do this? This is it's an ongoing process and it changes all the time. It's very fluid.
I tell people a lot of times, remember there's a person beneath that illness.
And it's difficult.
And it's very difficult. Yeah. But remember, there is a person under there, you know. May not be the same person that you envisioned at X age, but there is a person under there.
Absolutely.
And,
sorry, I have a question. You said that Priscilla dragged you to IFSS. Had she been going there before that, or
she had for a while? For yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
She had for a while. Right. Yes, but I wouldn't go.
And I get that as well. I get people who come without their spouse, and then sometimes they do. I get whole families, and sometimes, you know, you just get the one. And it changes. I have sometimes that I'll work with the whole family, and then eventually it just ends up mostly being the primary caregiver who really kind of is either with them most of the time or doing a lot of the legwork of looking for housing or any other services that might be out there.
Right.
Yeah, I'm wondering, you know, we're talking about the emergency room, and people hearing about it there. But I'm wondering for someone who has someone who maybe hasn't gone to the hospital, but they still need a lot of help, how they find out about you.
It's hard. We do community outreach. I've gone out into the area, and I talk to professionals and other you know, community programs that are out there of what we do, who we are, and give them information. I'm amazed. This program, I think, has been at 120 years, if not more, and every family I meet has never heard of us. So we do need to get the word out because families do need us, and they have no idea of the availability of what we do.
Right. We have to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple minutes.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.huntertonhealthcare.org.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Oh, folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for modern design.
This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, well, I'd like her room to be gray. And the little girl said, Mom, gray is the color of depression.
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
Welcome back to Mental Health Matters. We have Cheryl, and I'm like, I can't say it.
Osteik.
I have to try to remember that. It just doesn't look the way you say it.
It does not. It's those Dutch people.
Yeah, I guess. Anyway, we were talking about when families come and, you know, what the help they try to get. Or I know that I've run across numerous people who had either a son, daughter, sister, brother, mother, father, whatever, who had mental illness. And their attitude was, get over it. Come on, get up. Pull yourself together. Go on back out and, you know, do this and do this, especially if they were younger. And it seems like you can't get through to them that they'd love to pick themselves up and go back.
So many people have that attitude, and it's pervasive, and it's difficult. And I do think a lot of therapists get into the field they do because if you haven't been in that position, it is extremely difficult to know what that person is going through. And that's probably one of the worst things you could say to somebody is just pull yourself up by the bootstraps and get over it. If they could, they would.
Yeah.
People don't choose this. People don't want this. No one would ask for a life of struggling and pain and hurt and confusing thoughts or debilitating depression or severe anxiety that they can't leave the house. That's not something people ask for. Absolutely. Any of that.
Stuff.
I mean, to have those visions or those things in your head that just don't go away, it's definitely something no one would ever ask for. And I think that's one of the things we try to educate everybody with is mental illness can be a scary thing and it's difficult. And getting the word out and getting the support and talking about it and educating yourself, if you don't understand it, then get educated about it so you do and you can be kinder and have a better understanding of that. And I think one of the biggest things I promote when I speak with families is communication.
Mm-hmm.
People need to talk. If you're not talking about it, if you're not getting the word out there, if as a family unit you're not talking, it's very difficult to understand what your child is going through if they don't want to talk with you. If you don't have a relationship where they can feel comfortable to share and feel like you're not going to say something to knock them down. So that's a big thing that I talk about is getting the communication within the family, because if you start on a faulty communication base and then you throw a mental illness in there, it crumbles pretty quickly. You have to feel free to share what you're scared of.
And a lot of times, like in my son's situation, he would talk about things that were totally out of sight or out of
where is that coming
flat,
from?
Right.
What is that?
You know, he was in an isolated, obviously men's unit, and he talked about this girl that you know these girls that would come and you know, and I'm looking at him like what? You know?
Yeah.
And it was like so off the wall, you know. And the other thing is that, and I'm not blaming, you know, doctors or psychiatrists or whatever, but a lot of times they will use medication that have been proven successful in the past on other people. Now, you may be able to take aspirin and I can't.
Right.
So what works for you
Absolutely.
Won't work for me. And the problem is trying to go through all these medications to find something that will work.
It's painful.
It's painful, and it takes a heck
it takes
of a
so
lot
much
of time.
Time. So much time.
And, you know, sometimes it could be 4 or 5 months before
Absolutely.
They realize that the medication isn't working.
And then you got to start all over
and
again.
And then you got to, yeah. And, you know, and like in my son's situation, he was epileptic or is epileptic since he's 5. So the epileptic medication would mess up with the psychotic
right.
medication, and they'd go through hell and high water. And, you know, it's just – it's sad. It really
it
is.
It's one of the most frustrating things I hear from family members is we tried medication. We tried this one. We tried that one. And then this one gave off this side effect. And this one – you know, and it's it gets so frustrating for both the family member
right.
and the one with the diagnosis because then you just like – You give up. And
why would you want to take it?
And
you know,
right?
The one with the diagnosis is so resistant.
Absolutely,
the family members may want them to take it, but
yes, we get that a lot. We get it in two ways. One, once you're over 18, you can decide what you want to do and who doctors
right.
can talk to and who they can't. And that's frustrating as a caregiver. You might still have your adult child living at home, but they're refusing to talk to you about what's going on,
right.
refusing to share the
mm-hmm.
medication struggles or what they're doing. So you're left out of the loop, but you're in the household with them, expected to care for them. And the whole issue, I think, with medication, it's something you need to be patient with, and it's almost impossible to be patient when you're in crisis and you're struggling.
And like I said, my son's been epileptic since he's 5, so he's been on medication since he's 5. He didn't have a problem taking it. His question would, what is it supposed to do?
Right.
And what are the side effects?
Right.
And, you know, some of the side effects were like,
yeah.
you know, you just couldn't believe it. You
right.
know?
But, and then you can have medications that you take for years and suddenly they don't work
right,
anymore.
Exactly.
So you got to start all over again.
And the thing, too, is like a lot of medications, at least some of the ones he was on initially, not anymore, but he put on 45, 50 pounds.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, he is not tall. He's yeah. a smaller person. Now, you take a young girl, say 18,
Absolutely.
16, 17, 18, and put them on a medication where they gain 50 pounds. Ain't no way in hell they're going to take it.
Nope. I have numerous you know? Families who struggle with that,
yeah.
especially with their
right.
girls, if they
exactly.
won't take it because they gain weight.
And you can't blame them. And
nope.
you think about it. I mean,
you create
you
a whole other issue with the weight gain.
Right. You think about it from that person's standpoint.
Right.
You wouldn't want to take it yourself.
Right.
You know, you wouldn't want to put 50 pounds on.
Yeah.
I know I wouldn't. You know?
Yeah.
And, you know, so an average, you know, teenager sure wouldn't.
Right.
You know. And we had to stop the medication that was, you know.
That's a big issue with teenage girls. It's because a lot of the ones that work for depression or anxiety, they do put the weight on,
right.
and then they're more depressed. So
what
are you really solving
right.
at
right.
that
exactly.
point?
Created a new problem.
Yes,
yeah,
absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
You get a new issue.
Yeah.
You know? And it's unfair, you
yeah.
know.
I think it would be good to talk about maybe one more challenge that the families face, and then so how you have helped people will go into a positive spin after that. How does that sound?
What I do see a lot, I have a lot of parents who, when they've gone through this year after year, there could be one parent that thinks or feels differently about the issue, or it could just be what one is willing to endure and go through and what the other one is not. I see a lot of miscommunication within the parents. I see the struggle to keep their relationship assure, you know, support. I have had a lot of single parents who have come in who had ended up divorced because the pressure and the stressors of dealing with the child diagnosed with mental illness was just too much, and they couldn't come together as a team, and they looked at things differently. I think that's been a very big challenge, you know, that we try to work through. We are more than willing to meet with parents separately if that is part of the issue. We do want families to come back as a unit, and the dynamics that they started with might have been rough, and the mental illness kind of just blew it all apart because now the stressors were astronomical. So, again, we really do try to focus on what that family's unique needs are, because every single family is different. Even with the same diagnosis, similar medications, similar age group, I can tell you a completely different range of stories for where they're coming from and where they want to be. So it's not this one thing of, well, the family comes in and this is what we do. It's really, I would need to meet with the family and see what do they need and how can we work together to get there.
And a lot of times parents feel a loss, like when their loved one has mental illness.
Huge loss.
They feel like, you know, that...
Will they get married?
Right.
Will they have children?
Yeah.
Will they go to school?
Will they get a job?
Right.
You know,
right.
Exactly. You know?
Yeah.
And it also, there's an impact on siblings.
Yeah. Huge impact on siblings.
And, you know, you might want to speak to that because, you know, I know what had happened to my other three children.
Yeah. Siblings take it very differently. There are some who jump right in and can handle that. There are others who want no part of it and walk away. There are some who become that perfect child because they don't want to be another stressor to their parents, so they have to make sure that I'll just do everything I'm supposed to do so my parents don't have to worry about me. There are some who panic. Am I going to have to take care of my sibling when my parents are gone? You know, am I going to get a mental illness? How is that going to impact when I have children? Or what does that mean for us as a relationship? I used to play with my sibling when I was little, and now we can't do that anymore, and he's violent to me, or he's withdrawn from me, or can't talk to me anymore. So there's so many things that siblings go through.
And they can be resentful, too.
Oh, very resentful, very angry.
They're not getting the attention the other ones.
And then you see behaviors. You see all the behaviors that come out, you know, in the well individual, because, you know, parents are taking care of them and taking them to treatment and taking them to counseling. And what about me? So you see the gamut. I see it all. And I think my background in seeing it full front in the homes has helped me tremendously. We do see any family member. So if they're younger, they are more than welcome to come in with the family. But I also do encourage separate counseling so they can kind of talk with somebody. And,
oh, you mean
and
just the siblings?
Yes. Oh. I think the siblings very often need some type of support. If you don't want to put everything on the parents, because the parents need to be a parent, not a counselor, not a therapist.
I was wondering how often the siblings come in with the parents.
I would say for my particular caseload, I probably meet about 40% of siblings. I think there's a lot of, depending on the age, the younger they are, there's a little bit more resistance to talk about it.
I
encourage parents at that point to kind of go to their level, talk to them in their age group about what, because so often parents don't say anything, as if I don't talk about it, it's not there and we'll be okay. And kids pick up on way too much. And you really need to be able to talk to them and share, this is what's happening and it's okay and we'll figure it out and alleviate their anxieties.
You are talking about people who are at least 17 and a half. So you're probably not going to have that many siblings who are three or four or whatever.
Not a lot.
Yeah.
No,
so
unless there's a second. We've had second marriages come in and there are younger.
Mm-hmm.
But typically what I've had is a lot of older, so pretty much from 20 to 50 is the loved one with the diagnosis.
Right. Okay.
My oldest son felt it was his fault and, you know, blamed himself for, you know, his son, his brothers. And he would have wanted to do anything to help him and do this and do that. He'd run to the hospital, you know, half a dozen times, you know, a week. And finally, we took him aside and said, you know, it's not your fault.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, you're not responsible. You know, yeah, you want to help, fine, but you don't have to put put your whole life into, you know, looking out for your brother.
Yeah. Parents and siblings do that. Yeah. They take the guilt of this is my fault. I should have done something different.
Right.
And, you know, it's sad. It really is.
Yeah.
And, you know, what is, before we get on to the brighter things, Tracy wants to get onto the brighter side.
I heard you.
I heard you.
All the problems, so I'm looking at
what is the impact on people whose parents have mental illness?
That we get that as well.
I figured you did.
We do. That is always a struggle. Again, it's a household that can be very chaotic. Especially depending on what the relationship is with the parents, because when one has a mental illness and the other doesn't, normally all the household chores, the finances, everything kind of falls on the one parent, and that resentment can also impact the relationship. And I think it's crucial at that point for the children within the family to get some type of support and understanding of, one, what is the diagnosis? What does it look like in my family? And then what do we do about that? How can we come together as a family unit and figure it out? Because truly, it's a scary thing for a child to see that in their parent, right, who's supposed to be responsible and take care of them, and see that inability. And they also typically have to grow up too fast, take on household responsibilities that they're not ready for, and kind of lose their childhood because they're trying to either care for their other siblings or care for the parent.
Right, right. We have to take another quick break. We'll be back in just a couple minutes.
This is Tony Clark, para planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Sabía que de cada cinco personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental. NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Welcome back to Mental Health Matters. We're very privileged today to have with us
Cherie Oesteik.
Because she knew I wasn't going to be able to say it. Okay, Cherie. We've been talking about, you know, families who come to you, parents or siblings or whatever. And there's got to be resources that you have.
We do have resources. We offer community resources to the families, because I can tell you one of my biggest frustrations with families is how to navigate the mental health system. It is awful for them. Yep. It is, you're in crisis, you're struggling, you have questions and concerns, and you try to get help, and they're met very often with having to call this number and that number or try this person, and there's no clear-cut way to kind of consolidate things for them, and we try to do that. We have tons of flyers and just numbers for them, resources. I try to get it down to what's most important for them at that point, mm-hmm. and then guide them to that, and I ensure that if I do not have the answer, I will find the answer for them. We do have access, you know, to things around us with social services and through the hospital, so right. I can typically find the answer if I don't know it offhand, because it is such a struggle to have to figure out whether it's housing or finding a therapist, or do they need more treatment than just counseling, or, you know, what's going to happen for their future? What do I plan about money? What happens when we're no longer around? Or what if it is the parent and the children are, what do we do? So there's so many questions out there, and it's figuring out how best to get it down to just a few short questions that we can kind of start them with, so it's not so overwhelming.
I know one of the biggest problems in this county is housing.
Yes, it's horrific.
That's it one, is. And two is transport.
Yes.
And, you know, it's just so sad that, you know, the housing is such a problem.
And it is such a big thing for family members.
Yeah.
That there are family members that struggle with, you know, it could take years to find housing, right. And depending on what type of housing that individual needs, it's very, very right. difficult.
Right. You know, we were very fortunate when my son signed up, and they pulled shortly thereafter.
They pulled his name out of the hat.
They pulled his name. Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
The first time.
Yeah.
And I know people that have been on that thing for 2, 3, 4
yes.
years.
Yeah.
And, you know, are still waiting. So, you know, they pulled his out.
Right.
The first time. And, you know, he's been in that apartment now almost 8 years.
Right. Well, and I think even the types of housing, I mean, there are individuals, you know, who need 12-hour supervision, 24-hour supervision, just 4 hours, you know, there's all different supervision they need. Can they be with a roommate? Can they not be with a roommate? And it's so limited for what's out there. And then when you do find what you need, like you said, the waiting list is just so long.
I know that Easter Seals has housing. 24-hour, 12-hour, 8-hour,
yes.
4-hour.
Bridgeway helps to kind of get you to independent living if that's your goal for your family member.
My son went through the whole Easter Seal thing, and at the time, NAMI had two houses, a female house and a male house, and the male house was side by side, so there was two on one side and two on the other. And Easter Seals asked us if he could go to that house. And I didn't want it to look like we were pushing him in because we
yeah.
were, you know. But they suggested it, so we put him in. And he's still friends with the fellow that he was roommate with.
Right, yeah.
And he was there for a couple of years, and then he wanted to move out. And Bridgeway got him, you know, into where he's at now. He's on Broad Street in Flemington.
Mm-hmm.
Almost diagonally across from High Point, you know.
So, yeah.
Those apartments are really nice.
And yeah.
He's got his own apartment, and he's very happy. And his roommate moved in about a year ago in an apartment, you know.
Close by?
Right right there.
That's
in the
great.
Same complex.
That's great.
You know? So, and he's, you know, he's considered by the hospital a success story
yeah.
now.
And they're few and far between. It's sad to say.
He celebrated 4 years working at BJ's.
Yeah.
And he has his own apartment for almost 8. He takes his meds religiously.
I think that's
at the hospital one day a week.
That's one of the things yeah. there, Larry, is I think that's a struggle for family members is for that you know, for your child or your adult child to stick with treatment, to follow through on the medication, that if it is successful, and to stay with treatment. There's so many parents would tell me that they refuse their meds, they refuse to follow through on treatment, they refuse to have them as a part of their team for treatment. So you're kind of just pushed out of it and left to, well, what can I do if I'm being denied access to anything? And even out in New Jersey, if there's not a release of information, they won't give information to family members. Right. So you're left wondering what's happening, what's going on.
Well, I suggest to people, if their relative refuses to let them in or doctors talk to them, I suggest to people to write what they see, the dates and times they saw it,
right,
and send it to the doctor.
Yes, because you can give information.
Request.
Yes. You can give all the
information, but
just can't get it.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you know, and I know from experience with my son, not anymore, but used to, they would tell people would say what they think they want to hear. And I remember being, after he got transferred from Trenton Psych to Hagedorn, because Whitman was governor at the time, and she said if you have a state mental health hospital in your county, you get transferred there. So he got transferred to Hagedorn, and we were in a family meeting, and the psychiatrist, I believe she was German, but I'm not positive, and she would ask him questions, and he would answer. She would ask him questions, he would answer. And I looked at my wife, and she looked at me, and we knew he was BSing.
Right.
You know?
That's not my kid.
And all of a sudden, the psychiatrist slammed the desk with her hand, and she says, "Do you know the only person in this entire building who can release you is me? And you keep BSing me," she says, "and you'll be here till have a beard down to your toes."
Yeah.
She says, "So you better start answering the way you should answer, not what you think I want to hear."
Right.
And he went, you know, with a shocked look on his face and started answering properly. You know?
And I think which is great when that does happen. I do get a lot of family members who state, you know, there's just no insight there. They don't think they have a problem. They haven't taken responsibility for their behavior. They think it's everybody else's fault and everybody else has to figure it out. And I think that's one of the things I try to get them to promote for their family member is they have to take responsibility for what's going on. Mental illness or not, this is your life, and you have to figure out how to live it. You want to try to get them to be independent and work on that. So it's, you know, not allowing them to always do the blame game, that it is what it is. You know, you don't always get what you want. So you That's figure true. Out, okay, this is what I have, and I've got to deal with it. And there's more success that way.
Right. If you want to
I kinda just wanted to wrap up a little bit.
Go ahead.
For the caregivers out there, I know that being a caregiver can be an extremely satisfying role, but it also can be extremely challenging, physically and emotionally demanding. It's stressful. It can be exhausting. It can be very isolating. I think caregivers can have a variety of needs depending on their own individual situation. So some may feel they just need emotional support. Others would like practical assistance. There's some, they might want information and advice, while there are others who are looking for financial help. And there are some that just want the recognition of the hard work that they do. I see caregivers that just desperately need time off from the job that they do, and some are just desperate to find supportive services. There are others, just like Larry, who become involved further in the planning of all programs and take their life in a different direction. So as much as caregivers can be fiercely protective of those they care for and they work hard to provide for, they need support themselves. Getting external resources out there, getting treatment, all of that is difficult, and I feel caregivers lose track of who they are and what they need. And it's very important, just like that radio, airplane announcement we hear over the radio all the time, is take care of yourself first so you can take care of others. So that, to me, basically is the role of intensive family support services. So if you're looking for more information, if you just need somebody to kind of talk to about it or would like to connect with myself or my coworker, Angela, our number for intensive family support services is 908-788-6401, and my extension is 3344, and again, it's Cherie Osteik. Thank you so much, Larry and Tracy, for having me today.
Oh, you're very welcome.
And, you know, it's just, I tell caregivers, Everybody has something they like to do, whether it's read. I'm a big reader. Others like to walk. Others right. like to sit out and look at the sun and the stars or whatever. And I always say to them, take at least 15 minutes a day.
Absolutely.
Preferably more.
Right.
But at least 15 minutes a day and do what you like to do. If you like to read, then go in the other room alone by yourself and read. If you like to walk, you got a dog or whatever, take the dog and walk around a block.
I think it's the best thing and the hardest thing for caregivers to do.
It is, but you have to do it take care of yourself.
Yeah.
And I said, if you don't like doing any of that and you just want to sit on the deck and look at the moon,
then just sit on the deck.
Then sit on the deck and look at the moon.
Yes.
But you've got to do something for yourself.
Self-care
at least
is important.
Once a day. You know?
So that would be one of the goals, I assume, when you set up goals with people.
It is. That is number one on my list is self-care. Whether they want to listen to me or not, I insist that that is going to be one of our goals, that we focus on whether it's nutrition, exercise, hobbies, going out to lunch with a friend, whatever it might be. I insist that it has to be a daily part of your routine or it's not worth anything we're doing because they won't be able to be there for their family member.
Sherry, I really thank you coming on.
Thank you both for having me.
I will guarantee you will come back.
Great. Good.
You got to bring Angela with you.
I know,
time.
Right? I will.
To drag her.
I will have to drag her, but we'll get her in.
But it's been a pleasure, and thank you so much.
Thank you.
And remember, folks, we'll be here same time, same station next week. And remember, mental health really does matter.
100 Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. 100 Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call 100 Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdenhealthcare.org.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Hello, this is Nicole Smith, host of Happy to Help. Would you like to discover the secret to happiness? I talk to volunteers, executive directors, fundraisers, and authors about how nonprofit engagement enriches their lives. We thrive when we have a sense of purpose in our lives. Philanthropy is the new community. Tune in to Happy to Help every Wednesday at 10 a.m. to discover how to find your purpose and live well by doing good.
For over 50 years, Hunterdon Medical Center has been a leader in delivering comprehensive medical and health services to our community. Our staff is committed to providing the highest quality of care to our patients. If you need a physician, we can refer you to over 300 of the best. Call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
President Trump says he had a very good meeting with the Fed Reserve Chair Jerome Powell at the White House on Monday. The president tweeted that the two discussed interest rates, inflation, and the ongoing trade war with China. People are continuing to mourn in Fresno, California, as four people are dead and six others are recovering after they were shot at a party last night. Michael Reed is with the Fresno Police Department.
The initial information is that somebody came up on foot, possibly at least one suspect, and began firing. They fired into the backyard where most of the people were in this party.
Reed says dozens of people could have been in harm's way and also credits first responders for jumping into action at the scene of the shooting. The suspect or suspects are still on the run and detectives are canvassing the area and searching for eyewitnesses. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
Hi, everyone. Wayne Alarouche. Listen carefully to another great offer on one of the most sought-after assets on Earth. The world of political turmoil just gets crazier and crazier. Impeachment hearings, China trade wars, Fed money pumping, which are creating bubbles that could burst any day now. With one exception, gold and silver, which are currently undervalued and have excellent growth potential in 2020. So here's another irresistible offer to help you cash in on asset protection while you still can. My sponsor, Swiss America, is willing to ship my listeners another popular silver coin, the U.S. Peace Dollar, for just $16.50 each delivered while supplies last. You heard me right. This is an exclusive offer to my listeners by calling 800-289-2646. Write it down. 800-289-2646. Get your supply of silver U.S. Peace Dollars for just $16.50 each delivered. 800-289-2646 or go to SwissAmerica.com.
Three more days of public hearings are expected this week in the ongoing impeachment inquiry against President Trump. Congressman Lee Zeldin of New York says this probe has only hurt the nation.
What we've seen from this entire impeachment charade is an effort that essentially and eagerly tears our country in half. We should be focusing on important priorities for our constituents.
A big announcement from one of the major automakers. With the details, here's USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes.
Ford has unveiled its new electric SUV, the Mustang Mach-E. After months of hype, it costs about $44,000 and has a range of 230 miles.
House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy sent a letter to ABC News demanding answers surrounding allegations the network killed a 2015 story about dead alleged child sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein. So far, no word from ABC News regarding this letter. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines. 800-2-
lifted off the runway when it suddenly veered left, crashing into the hangar. The FAA, as well as officials from the National Transportation Safety Board, are on scene.
For more news, please remember you can find us on Facebook at USA Radio. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Hello, my name is Robert Burns. My website is BobBurnsSpeaks.com. And I'm inviting you to listen to my show at 1 o'clock on Friday afternoons on Hunterdon Chamber Radio entitled Awaken to Your Purpose. How many people walk through life awake and knowing why they were incarnated here in this beautiful planet? Not a lot of people do. I was in my late 40s by the time I found out, but now I know. So listen to the show, and maybe that'll promote you to awaken to your purpose. And thank you so much.
Once again, it is time for the Mike Hewitt Show, brought to you by RenegadeRiver.com. Ready we are. Let's take this thing and run.
We are running. I'm telling you, folks. Listen, I am Mike Hewitt, co-hosts Miles Bauer and Ludwig von Wiedemdorski. Ludwig, are we Facebook streaming?
Yes, we are.
I wonder if there's audio. I always
there
wonder.
Is.
Is there?
Yeah.
Hot dog. Listen, Miles Bauer, I got to ask you, how do you say this guy's name? Is it Avenatti? Am I saying it right?
Avenatti, yeah.
And Biden rips him off. Biden just can't get himself out of the plagiarist mode. Serious.
But see, actually, that phrase came up during the RNC in 2016. It was started by Scott Baio, the actor.
So Scott Baio took it from way back when. And,
right.
Biden liked Scott Baio so much that he
No, I'm saying Avenatti got it from Bayo.
I get it.
And then Biden got it from Avenatti.
So Avenatti and Biden, no matter how we paint this, are not exactly original.
Right.
Folks, you ever been on retread tires? I have. That's that's what I think of whenever I think of Biden, is retread tires. Ludwig, what are you doing? You're concentrating terrible over there.
It's been a while since I've had to share this thing all over the place.
I'm wondering if there's any audio on it still.
They might have muted you, but there is.
Just because I said your name and they knew you were up next.
No, they actually turned it up then. They're CC's on just so they can know when I'm coming.
Just Tom Martini. He's the only one that said it.
Oh, yeah. Wait till you see how many streams get from the Ludwig page.
I'm seeing there's a few people watching. That scares me because we know what you'll do to us. All right. Before we move on from Biden, what do you think?
Biden, man, you would think that guy, well, he probably needs to plagiarize so he's not doing or saying something stupid.